Girish Mathrubootham, the co-founder and CEO of software as a service giant Freshworks, had a tough childhood.
So I think the biggest life lesson has been learn to own the consequences of your decisions. That's it. So when you are, which means I also had to make my own decisions
at the younger age.
So you make right decisions and wrong decisions, but you learn to live with the consequences of decisions. I think that's a very, very important lesson, because as parents, a lot of times we do not actually encourage our children to take their own decisions. Even if we take them to a restaurant.
Face the consequences.
Even when we take them to a restaurant, parents decide what food the kid has to eat, or what dress would suit the kid, or what toy would suit the kid. And like, if you take all the decisions till the kid is 20, 21, 22, and then suddenly at 25, 27, they get married, how are they supposed to take decisions? They do not have a decision-making framework. So I think parents have to understand that. I think that was my biggest way it helped me, is I had to figure out my own decision-making framework. And right or wrong, I had to live with the consequences of the decisions. Right from choosing which school I would study my 11th and 12th grade, what course I would do, which college I will go to, which city I will move to, where would I apply for a job. So all of my life decisions were independent decisions.
The consequences of Girish's decisions turned him into a person who became adept at spotting untapped opportunities. And once he got good at that, he became also adept at learning so that he could do something about those untapped opportunities.
So my first car was a Nissan Pathfinder. Probably the name resonated with me. Like, I want to go where others have not gone before, right? So I think that learning journey is what motivates me more than money itself, right? So
Girish isn't just the CEO of a NASDAQ-listed SaaS company. He's also deeply involved in SaaS Boomi, a community that calls itself the world's largest pay-it-forward community of SaaS founders. As one of SaaS Boomi's founding members, Girish played a huge role in shaping its culture of openness and paying it forward. He did it by sharing in detail the methods and tactics that got a young Freshworks to $1 million in annual revenue. Then, a few years later, he explained at SaaS Boomi how he took Freshworks from $1 million to $5 million in annual revenue. This open sourcing of your business and product strategy was rare.
So my job at Freshworks, I was able to demonstrate that, hey, you can build a world-class product company from India. And as CEO now, when I say it can be done, people listen. And my opening up the playbooks at SaaS Boomi was also around that. Like, in fact, we coined the term SaaS Boomi because, and my cousin has told me that, like, why are you talking about your trade secrets?
Girish also set up a football academy, FC Madras, with a grant of 100 crore rupees of his own money.
See, if you look at 2018, I've talked about this in the past, for the FIFA World Cup, Iceland qualified as one of the 32 teams. And Iceland has a population of 330,000 people, which is less than one of the smaller wards in Chennai, right? So if a country like Iceland can qualify, why can't a country like India qualify for the World Cup? But that is still a far-fetched dream. We are not even in the top five in Asia, which is how we'll qualify, right? So India has got the talent, but we lack the infrastructure. Nobody's making the RC. Government has other priorities and problems.
Welcome to part two of my conversation with Girish. This episode two, like the first part, is filled with colorful quotes and examples ranging from Steve Jobs to Rajnikanth movies. This is episode 43 of First Principles Season 2. I'm Rohin Dharmakumar, your host. Let's get started. To switch tracks a little bit again, and something that you said in the past, which is when you become rich, it's not about increasing the standard of living, it's about increasing the standard of giving. Was there a point in your life when you arrived at this? And if so, what was the thought process?
See, I think, I don't think there was any particular point of timing in my life. I think I've never been, I'm an aspirational person, but I've never been motivated by money. So,
why do you call yourself aspirational? What is the aspiration or aspirations that drive you then?
See, I want to probably get recognized. I want to explore new things, accomplish new things. So my first car was a Nissan Pathfinder. Probably the name resonated with me. Like I want to go where others have not gone before. Right? So I think that learning journey is what motivates me more than money itself. Right? So, and again, I probably already have everything that most normal people would want and more. Like, see, and I don't keep desiring for more and more, right? Like, so if you want a good car, you have a good car. If you want a good house, you have a good house. If you want a washing machine and a sofa, that's fine. So my happiness comes from small things, like playing a game of tennis, having a beer with a friend. So that is what happiness is, right? Because no matter how big your home is, like, you can only sleep in one bed, right? So so I think, and also I think somewhere along the line, I've been inspired by other folks where the purpose of money is to serve society beyond a point. Like, of course, yeah, one has to provide for themselves and their family. But beyond that, it has to go back to society at large. And you have seen that with so many people indulging in philanthropy. And I think that is important to do. Otherwise, what are you going to do? The number in the bank doesn't excite me.
Money isn't the only resource that you give away, though. You've spent a considerable amount of your time giving away time and giving away expertise. For instance, I think you've been one of the first people to start giving away your playbooks of how you built a business, how you reached 1 million, how you reached from 1 million to 2 million, how you did X, how you did Y. And it wasn't popular, it wasn't common, etc., right? And obviously, it's an important, valuable resource. Most organizations, and I would be lying if I said, so we weren't the kind, would want to safeguard that which makes them unique. But you chose to give that away as well, right? So the theme of giving is not just money, right? So something larger. Again, what's
See, I think if you look at the different things I'm involved with, from the outside, it looks like probably four different things, right? Like I have Freshworks. I have, like, I'm involved in SaaS Bhumi. I've started Together Fund. And I have my charity, FC Madras. So from the outside, people have asked me, Girish, why are you doing so many things? Why can't you just focus on Freshworks, right? See, in my mind, it's one thing, which is creating world champions from India. So my job at Freshworks, I was able to demonstrate that, hey, you can build a world-class product company from India. And as CEO, now when I say it can be done, people listen. And my opening up the playbooks at SaaS Bhumi was also around that. Like, in fact, we coined the term SaaS Bhumi because, and my cousin has told me that, like, why are you talking about your trade secrets? Even if you publish it in a book, you will get a lot more money than just talking about it on YouTube. Like, I went and spoke at IIM Ahmedabad on how to start a startup, the India SaaS model. So I believe I fundamentally believe givers get more, right? So more importantly, India needs it. It's never about Freshworks. It's about how, because what is the biggest problem in India? It's unemployment. How do we, and IT services is not growing the way it used to grow. So we need to create product companies in India so that we can have the, like, more wealth generated for our people and employees. So which means everybody has to do it. And what's the difference between Silicon Valley? I've talked about this in the Inc. talk. Like, what's the difference between what makes Silicon Valley Silicon Valley? Is it VC money? We have VC money here. Is it the government? At that time, we had Trump government. Then we had better government here. So the only difference was talent. They've been there, done that talent, right? And I spoke about that. Like, if I have 2,000, today we have 5,000 employees, most of them 80% in India. And now you can see 62 startups, I think, or more, have come only from Freshworks. They are co-founders are from Freshworks.
And you've invested in a majority of them?
No, not a majority of them. I invest in companies that I like if they want to take money. Some of them have not approached me, and some of them we have invested through Together Fund. Some of them I've invested personally before starting Together Fund. But the point is, and where are all these startups hiring from? Where are all the SaaS companies hiring from? Now, when I started, I had to bet on the learning mindset. I had to figure out hiring people who have never done this before and teach them. Now, people can hire from Freshworks and they are getting the talent ready-made for SaaS, right? And is that a recipe for success? I don't know. But we are providing we have created that ecosystem today. Between 2015 to 2024, you can see how much the SaaS ecosystem has grown. So if you take SaaS Bhumi, where we wanted to do that for India as a product nation, if you take Together Fund, we also realized that, hey, while there is money, VC money in India, till very recently, there was nobody who was focused on B2B SaaS product companies from India. We were the first ones. Now everybody is investing in SaaS. But go back to 2019 or even 2020, there were top-tier VC firms who would invest everywhere. They would invest in consumer internet, they would invest in fintech, they would invest in SaaS companies also. But we felt that there is a need for a focused operator-led B2B SaaS fund. And again, because we're doing the work, we have the know-how, we can identify these Olympic champions from India, like the startups who can go global and help them scale. So that's the idea with which we started that. FC Madras is the sports version of that.
Before you go to FC Madras on Product Nation, etc., I think not till many years ago, the number of SaaS companies from India who had $10 million in ARR was just a handful maybe. Right?
Yeah, I think I can tell you in 2016, there was a conference where I spoke and we had a show of hands. Hmm. How many companies have more than 5 million?
Hmm.
Mine was the only hand that was
up. All right. Yeah. And now, today, the number of companies that are doing more than 5 to 10 million would be like what? I mean, I heard some number that's close to probably
100. I think SaaS, Avinash would be the best person to ask because we have all the data.
Hmm.
I don't remember it top of the head, but we have the number of companies who have crossed 100, who have crossed 50, who have crossed 25.
It's dozens.
It's right? Like a 4x increase overall.
And you also said that, I mean, as recently as 2020, 2021, like, you know, nobody was betting on B2B. Now, the disconnect that I'm seeing is that obviously something big happened in the last, like, you know, 5 to 10 years, right? Like, you know, in terms of this growth, this explosion of SaaS companies and B2B companies, right? And they're all growing, and right? And VCs are, and you said VCs largely, and I'm not talking about any one specific VC, they are supposed to be in the business of being able to see these inflection points and invest in. So why was it not happening? Why does it require operators to come?
So you said the inflection points. Mm. Right? So the inflection points that we influenced were when we hit 100 million and 200 million,
mm.
we did press releases specifically mentioning that Freshworks has crossed this. And then the IPO was the best inflection point where we had, and you know, in India, exits for VCs were very rare, right? Flipkart was yes. the best exit, and then Zomato IPO happened, and Freshworks IPO happened around the same time. So I think even today, like, these are the inflection points where we had shown that, okay, an M&A like Flipkart, Walmart acquiring Flipkart could happen, a US listing like Freshworks could happen, that opened the floodgates for India SaaS, right? And so that, and everybody, and it is true for companies like Flipkart also. When Flipkart was scaling, you could see so many other consumer internet startups scaling, right? And we could see what happened in China was being replicated in India, right? With all the services like food delivery or local services and so on. So everything was getting replicated. So Flipkart was, and even as a startup, was a very inflection. The success of Flipkart was an inflection point which enabled more SaaS companies to come. I would say the success of Freshworks is also a similar story where it got more people believing that, hey, there is a model. I can do inbound, I can sit in India, build products, sell to the world, I can acquire customers and grow, I can raise VC funding. And so that journey is now, we are in that decade.
I've heard you had a tough childhood as well. How has it influenced who you've become today?
So I think the biggest life lesson has been learn to own the consequences of your decisions. That's it.
Hmm.
So when you are, and so which means I also had to make my own decisions
at
the younger age.
Hmm.
So you make right decisions and wrong decisions, but you learn to live with the consequences of decisions. I think that's a very, very important lesson, because as parents, a lot of times we do not actually encourage our children to take their own decisions. Even if we take them to a restaurant.
Face the consequences.
Yeah, no, even when we take them to a restaurant, parents decide what food the kid has to eat, or what dress would suit the kid, or what toy would suit the kid. And like, if you take all the decisions till the kid is 20, 21, 22, and then suddenly at 25, 27, they get married, how are they supposed to take decisions? They do not have a decision-making framework. So I think parents have to understand that. I think that was my biggest way it helped me, is I had to figure out my own decision-making framework. And right or wrong, I had to live with the consequences of the decisions. Right from choosing which school I would study my 11th and 12th grade, what course I would do, which college I will go to, which city I will move to, where would I apply for a job. So all of my life decisions were independent decisions.
Have you managed to pass on that to your children? Like, you have two sons.
One oh, yeah. Now I wish I had taken out some control. So my boys are very, very independent, and they make their own decisions. And, I'm super happy. But sometimes I wish I could still make some decisions for them.
You said that money no longer motivates you, because after a certain amount of time, like, you know, I mean, wealth, you said that it's just like, you know, no, numbers.
Correction.
Hmm.
Money never was the motivation for me.
Right. What's driving you then?
So the learning journey.
What are you like, if I were to ask you today, what is it that you're most excited about to learn, or what's the most exciting learning journey right now, or which are the ones for you? What are they? What are you excited by?
So multiple paths. Right?
Yeah.
So one, running a public company, it's a very fascinating learning journey. It's not easy, but it's completely different from running a VC company, right? So if you were to take the game level approach, this is, let's say at IPO, I said, I feel like an Indian athlete has won the Olympic gold, right? Now I feel like, okay, I'm competing with the best. So I better practice daily. The practice is always hard, but I get a chance to run. So every quarter, I go and run a race with when I'm compared with the best in the world, right? So, and I know how I'm standing, but we can improve. So this is a very different game. And knowing the rules of the game have changed, that's a fantastic, fascinating learning journey. And then we can also see that, hey, everybody thinks an IPO is like a one-time event, right? You are always talking to investors, giving them clarity of the company, like the many, so many new investors who want to come in, they want to understand. It's like VC fundraising at a much bigger scale, right? So every meeting that you have could potentially be $50 million to $200 million, $300 million worth, but they are not in a hurry. They take time. They make sure they take multiple meetings. Everything that you say is clearly captured, and they actually see if I were delivering. Look at what we said at the IPO, if you can go back and look at it, and then look at what we have delivered. So you could see that the consistency that we did in everything that we said and everything that we did, you can see that. And that is attracting public investors. So this is a fascinating game played at a global level. So that's a big journey. On a personal level, I'm learning how to play poker. So that is fascinating for me as well. And FC Madras is another interesting part. Where,
yeah, let's talk about FC Madras. Why football? I've heard you're a huge cricket fan.
No.
You know?
No,
you know?
I watch cricket, but...
But between cricket and like before FC Madras, like, have you always been a football fan?
Yes. Okay. I love watching football much more than watching cricket.
So what's the thought behind? You've put in what? 100 crores of your money into FC... why? And what's driving that? See, what's the journey that's driving you there?
See, if you look at 2018, I've talked about this in the past, for the FIFA World Cup, Iceland qualified as one of the 32 teams. And Iceland has a population of 330,000 people, which is less than one of the smaller wards in Chennai, right? So if a country like Iceland can qualify, why can't a country like India qualify for the World Cup? But that is still a far-fetched dream. We are not even in the top five in Asia, which is how we'll qualify, right? So India has got the talent, but we lack the infrastructure. Nobody's making the art. See, government has other priorities and problems. So somebody has to do it. And like Steve Jobs says, stay hungry, stay foolish. I don't think too much. I saw this lack of infrastructure. As I told you, the purpose of money is to serve society. I felt like, hey, we should create something for our children. The FFN moment was when my younger son was playing casually, recreationally. There are two
How
things.
How old are your sons?
Now they are 20 and 19. Yeah, so...
You were talking about playing football.
Like, huh? When I used to take him to a school in Adyar, like they would be playing in a mud ground. There would be 75 or 80 children playing in one ground, dividing the ground into smaller groups, and everybody would be playing. The whole atmosphere would be like all the mud rising up in the air, right? And our children are playing there. And then in the weekends, they will be taken to Assistant College in the outskirts of Chennai, and they have a nice natural grass turf. You could see the joy in the kids and the parents when they go out all the way to just have one match, 1 hour in a good ground, right? I feel our children deserve better infrastructure. So I just thought, okay, somebody has to do it. I'll do my part. What makes me super happy is like I'm not even asking for more money from others to support my foundation. I am actually hoping that I can inspire more entrepreneurs who are successful to do things like this in their own cities. So because India needs 100 such academies, we cannot produce champions with one academy, right? If you look at the grassroots systems that are in play in the US, and US is not even the top footballing nation, but like every high school has a team, every county has multiple leagues. So there are so many people coming into the game, and then you can spot the talent and select it. We have the talent. But we need to inspire more and more people to build such things so that you can actually get the talent pool flowing.
You have a chip on your shoulder, and I say this in a good way, in the sense that many of the things that you want to do are always about proving a point that this can be done out of India. Why can't Indians be great at football? What is it like to run a public company, etc., right? So I think what the common thread that I'm seeing is, as an outsider in that sense, is I think you're attracted to transformation, right? Like you talked about training as one of your passions, but the way I'm kind of seeing it is like training, taking something or some people and essentially trying to transform them into something that they are not, etc. and stuff, right? Would that be like, you know, that in some senses that you're drawn to transformation potential?
Maybe. I don't know. It's your feelings. So I can't argue with your feelings. one interpretation of that. Maybe I haven't thought about it that way.
No, but where does this...
When you said chip on the shoulder, I was just thinking as long as it's not a red chip.
No,
like
no,
Chitty
no, exactly.
Robot, it's a blue
which
chip.
Is why I immediately clarified saying that chip on the shoulder in the sense of always
wanting to prove... Did you get the movie reference?
Which one? Sorry, no.
So I said, I hope it's not a red chip, it's a blue chip.
Sorry, which is the movie reference here?
Chitty Robo, Indiran Robot movie.
Oh, I'm sorry. I would not have got it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure the superstar fans in the audience will get it.
All right. I wanted to talk to you about... You spoke about poker. I wanted to speak to you about bets. And something that we spoke earlier about, which is like, you know, VC-funded companies are encouraged to bet in many ways the entire future, right? Go big or go home implies the other side of the bet is you go home. It didn't work out, shut down the company, fine. VCs are fine with big then. You're at a stage now where obviously that's out of the question. You're not going to bet the house and you shouldn't, right? Because of what you've built. Therefore, what are big bets now? How do you look at the risk of taking big bets? And
no,
what
we
are
have
big
to.
Bets?
Like in our industry, you cannot rely. Nobody is big, right? Think about AI. AI can actually, I tell my team, this can be our iPhone moment or this can be our BlackBerry moment, right? So it's how we capitalize the opportunity and do it, right? So many big companies, like we have gone through, like when, you know, remember Digital, HP,
yes, of course,
and Compaq, and so our Blockbuster before Netflix. So nobody, like, you have to be always looking at, hey, what do customers really want? How relevant are our products? And are we really making the right investments, taking the right bets in order to?
So, but that's my question. That what does a big bet, capital B, big bet look like for Freshworks today?
See, today, like, we have outlined it and talked about it publicly. So, number one is our investments in AI. So, to transform all of our software. Number two, we just released a new product in August last year called Freshworks Customer Service Suite, which is the most modern, comprehensive, omni-channel customer service suite, helping businesses engage with customers on WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, in addition to email and phone, with bot automation and so on. In Freshservice, we have the most modern ITSM and employee. So we moved from IT, helping IT departments serve employees, to having the same product to actually help HR departments, HR teams, finance team, legal team, everybody can engage and help employees with their queries, right? So, like, digitizing workflows across the entire company for every department. So that's a big bet. We are bringing AI into analyzing IT incidents. Like, today, humans are spending so much time. So there are, broadly, these are the big bets. Like, how do we leverage AI and monetize AI so that we move to be an AI-enabled and AI-first company? How do we lead in customer service by being the most modern customer service platform? And how do we transform into an employee experience and digitizing workflows platform for the employees?
All right. In many of these areas that you mentioned within the organization, targeting a specific area, etc. So I want to kind of zoom back and look at the way within organizations the entire software space has evolved, where earlier it used to be that you had, let's say, a Microsoft monolith or an SAP monolith, and all employees would use software modules from within that, to it started getting disrupted and you started using one, to now where, you know, I mean, I've read more and more pieces about how even if, like, you know, a typical organization, even a young startup, could be subscribed to 20, 30, 40 different SaaS products for very micro segments and niches, to the extent that it's possibly becoming either, like, a lot of overlap or too expensive. How does this, like, since you're in the SaaS space, is this a pendulum swinging, and where does this carry forward to?
See, it is a cycle. So we have seen what in the IT management space, what we call as the big four, like people always buy IBM or BMC or CA or HP, right? And the promise of these four companies used to be like, hey, we offer an integrated suite of product. And then we, I would say 2000 to 2010 or till now, there was the rise of the best of breed. So APIs became the standard. The multiple tools for everything, and then you connect through APIs, data flows through products. So you buy best of breed products. Now, what happens in this is there is now a proliferation of so many best of breed that it starts becoming like an unstable Jenga game, right? Like the stack is so complicated.
Cognitive overload as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, and when people take it to an extreme where features and modules now become products, right? So And that is when there is again consolidation opportunity. And this has played out again and again and again in the industry. I'll give you a couple of examples. Like, okay, let's take simple examples. You remember Foursquare?
Yes.
And before Facebook, like, you used to check in Foursquare and publish on Facebook. What did Facebook do? They built the check-in feature themselves. We talked about Real Media Player and WinZip. We didn't talk about, but these were tools that you used to buy on Windows machine. When Microsoft saw that, hey, every one of my user wants to listen to music and they want to compress files, why won't I build it natively in my feature? Like, there used to be a technology called NetFlow, where companies used to provide a hardware box sitting at the edge next to every Cisco router, analyzing van traffic and giving them reports on who's using, like, what are the top sources and destination of traffic. Cisco saw that, hey, I'm already sitting at the edge. All the traffic is flowing through me. Why is this new box sitting next to me and collecting that? I can build that myself and do that, right? So there are many, many times when tech startups or other companies build these adjacent modules, which are not full-fledged big opportunities. And that provides opportunity for acquisitions or tuck-ins or build that. So it becomes part of the larger platform. So the number of tools, like if you have to use, look at the sales stack today, right? You have sales enablement, you have CRM, you have lead enrichment, you have campaign management, you have sales commission planning. So okay, how many tools will you buy? And if there is an opportunity to have a single platform that provides, like, say, the functionality of 10 different tools, customers will buy that because it simplifies the whole experience.
So it's an unbundling, rebundling wave.
Yeah.
It's a cycle that you're saying will
continue. And because new innovation will always happen around the fringes.
To close it off, you have two sons. You're a parent. What's your biggest worry or anxiety as a parent?
See, I think youngsters these days, there is so much distraction through social media. They consume a lot than creating anything meaningful. So the habit of reading is completely gone. Life is spent on TikTok. The knowledge comes from TikTok. For my children, I'm saying. So I think I know what they need to do is figure out their passion, because this is the life story for the template for success for any human being is you need to figure out what you're really good at, what you really enjoy doing. It's the ikigai, right? So what people will pay money for, what society needs, what you are good at, what you love doing. If you can find that intersection, that's when you're happy and you're successful. You can make money without being happy. That's not a great place. So I think my worry is the first step. How will they even find out what they're really good at and what they love doing? Right? That's the first step. And then we can offer them help on what and so. But they're young and they need to go through that learning journey. I did not know what I'm really good at when I was 19. So I think
that's one of the fundamental, I think, dichotomies of being a parent, right? Like, you know, you forget how long it took you to get some things, but you want your children to arrive at it much earlier.
Yeah, but because there is also so much more exposure now. Like, if you look at what my children know and do now, I definitely did not do those know about those things when I was, say, 18 or 19. So information is traveling fast. So it's not unfair to ask, but I'm not pushing, but it's important. At least I've had that conversation with them for them to figure out, or at least start thinking about, what do they want to do? What do they enjoy doing?
Thank you so much for your time, Girish. We appreciate having you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.